Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Today's podcast is brought to you by the UUSM Choir. Come sing with us and be part of the music ministry at UUSM. Our guest today is Jeremy Raven, UUSM's brand new music director. Jeremy is a music director, recording engineer, and teacher who currently lives in San Jose. Jeremy grew up in Napa, where at a very early age, his parents identified an incredible passion for music, and more specifically, singing. Jeremy got his first opportunity to sing in an ensemble when he joined his home church choir at 9 years old. And he has been singing practically nonstop ever since. Coming out of Napa, Jeremy was fortunate enough to attend Stanford University for both undergraduate and grad school. And as a result, he has always called the Bay Area his home. Entering Stanford, Jeremy had no idea what exactly he wanted to study. And for the first couple of years of undergrad, Jeremy essentially took classes that seemed interesting to him. This is how he discovered two academic passions that would become the pillars of his education: music and computer science. Interest in these subjects eventually turned into a BA in music and an MA in music, with a concentration in music, science, and technology. Jeremy got his first music directing experience while in undergrad as the music director of the Fleet Street Singers, a tenor bass voice a cappella group that specializes in close barbershop style harmony, comedy, and all original compositions. Jeremy got his first teaching experience as a graduate student as a teacher's assistant for introductory music classes, teaching those without defined musical training the fundamentals of music theory. Fast forward to today. Jeremy is still an active singer, especially as a baritone for the Fog City Singers Barbershop Chorus based out of San Francisco, for whom he serves as president. When he is not singing or directing music, Jeremy has taken to working as a substitute teacher, having recently finished a long-term role as a resident substitute for sixth grade students at Silverado Middle School in Napa. Jeremy, welcome to the Connections Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I've been looking forward to sitting down with you for the podcast so that the UUSM community can get to know you a little better. What were you like as a kid?
Man, as a kid? Like 2 years ago?
Well, that is kind of a thing. Jeremy is 26, so to most of us, Jeremy is a kid. But let's say when you were a little kid.
Little kid, yeah. I was a sponge for knowledge and learning, always. Wow. And I'm fortunate enough that I had a family that just completely supported me in that. It's just like, give him puzzles, give him books. I love to read. Give him worksheets and workbooks and anything else that he can just do anything to stimulate his brain, because he really seems to like learning. Yeah. In some ways, as I've gotten older, that just hasn't changed at all. I'm still just an absolute fiend for learning and for knowledge and for stimulating my brain in these ways. I'm just really, really thankful and blessed in hindsight that I was never self-conscious about that, or I was never made to feel less than because I had this interest in growing my brain and being somebody who's just obsessed with learning. And I didn't even realize until later in life that that's not the case for everybody.
Right.
Usually if people are typecast to be that kind of person, or they find themselves in that situation, it could come with a lot of strife from peer groups or whatever. And I'm thankful in that I never really had that. even though I wouldn't ever describe myself as being a sheltered kid. It's just really lucky and very supported.
Did you have siblings growing up?
Yeah, a younger sister. She's 2 years, 10 months younger than me. Her name is Julia. She currently is in Chicago, Illinois, doing absolutely incredible stuff out there. Growing up, the two of us, we were siblings, and we absolutely had that relationship that you can only have with somebody who's your sibling. Right. And the way I see it, even though we had an age difference, my sister was born in 99. I was born in late 96. And my parents agreed, I think, early on that we're not going to stratify what we're introducing to our children. We're not going to make sure that we're introducing Jeremy to everything and then hold off on doing the same stuff with Julia for another 2 years or 10 months. We're pretty much just going to try to raise them both at the same time with, of course, a few key exceptions, like my sister wasn't driving at 13 or whatever. But as a result, it was as though we were both raised, I think, as if we were born in like early 97. So even though she's my little sister, I definitely don't see her as being anything other than my complete equal and in many ways my closest friend.
Sure.
Who I have.
When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, even as a kid, that was a difficult question to answer. I was never like a fireman kid or a policeman kid or a spaceman kid or anything like that. I was just like, I just want to go to school. I just want to read this book. I just want to watch this television program, and we'll think about that big picture stuff later. Here I am at 26 and doing stuff and getting jobs and everything, and I still don't really know what I want to be when I grow up. I don't, and now I'm all grown up, but you know, I still think that's okay. It was a question that I was always uncomfortable with, just because I felt like in answering, you were limiting yourself to just a couple of prospects. I want to try all these things. I want to do all that stuff. And that's not to say that I still these days have ambitions on being a brain surgeon or anything like that. I think it might be a little too late to start that journey.
Never too late. You already did this a little bit. Tell us about your family, whoever is included under that umbrella word.
Yeah, of course. I totally recognize that that word means different things to different people. What family means to me is the people to whom I'm related in my family tree, so to speak. So I grew up in a household of four, my mom, Gina, my dad, John, and my younger sister, Julia. And for a while, it was just the four of us. We were very close as a family, and my parents both were incredibly supportive of myself and Julia, just making sure that they were there for us. That was never something that came into question for Julia and me growing up. It's like, yeah, we have parents who are really involved in our lives. Not too involved, but making sure that they're creating the time to be chaperones on class field trips and take us to after school activities and doing all that other stuff that I'm incredibly grateful for in hindsight. And even in the moment, I was like, this isn't something that everybody gets. And that's a really cool, a really special thing. I have a greater family on each side of the family. My dad's side of the family now mostly lives in Wisconsin because that's where he grew up. So I have my Midwest family of sorts that's centered mostly around the Milwaukee suburbs, and also a fair amount of them now live in Minnesota as well. And then my mother's side of the family is almost entirely in the Bay Area. I have an aunt in San Jose, close to where I live, an uncle and aunt who live in San Francisco, and other grandparents in San Jose, great aunt and great uncle who live in Berkeley. And then, of course, my mom still lives in Napa. So all across the Bay, you're never too far away from somebody from that side of the family. And we get together fairly often for gatherings. My parents are not together anymore. They divorced shortly after my sister graduated from high school quite amicably, like no bad blood at all. They can still very much be in the same room and have been. It was just in many ways time to move on. My dad does live in Wisconsin now with my stepmom, Mary. And my mom has also found someone new, her sweetheart when she was in college, named Dean. And both Dean and Mary, I love very much as well. So in many ways, it's been a cool thing to expand the family scope. That's my family.
Okay.
I have friends with whom I'm very close, because I know that some people say that their friends are their family. And I've never used that phrase. To me, there is a pretty specific delineation in my mind between those two. But I also use the word friends with an incredible amount of reverence. If I say that a person is my friend, I'm not slighting them in any way. I still hold my friendships in very high regard. I think that's friendships are probably some of the most important and valuable things that we can have as people.
Agree. I know you started ensemble singing when you were 9 in your home church choir.
Yeah,
incredible.
Got in there early.
I guess you would be totally open to a 9-year-old joining the UU.
It would be hypocritical of me not to. That's true. If there are any 9-year-olds who are listening to this podcast right now and want to start singing, there's a place for you. I can tell you that.
Could you share a little bit about your religious bio with the listeners?
Yeah, of course. I grew up as a member, my entire family, members of St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Napa, California, which is on 3rd Street. We were heavily involved with our church. Early on, I joined the choir because the director at this church was also the director of a high school choral program where I would end up eventually going to high school. And I wanted to get to know him early because I could just see even then that that could be a relationship that I could build that could potentially last an entire lifetime and certainly lead to great things. And I did end up going to Napa High, where I sang with Travis under his direction for all the time that I was there. Travis Rogers, by the way, the retired director of the Napa High Choir Program and the St. Mary's Church, the music director as well. My sister and I both served as acolytes in the church for 8-10 odd years or something. I was always the kid who was waving the frankincense all around during Christmas services and making the room smell all nice. My dad served on vestry for a long time. My mom was also in the choir with me. In many ways, St. Mary's was just a pillar of community that we had growing up in Napa. These days, I don't necessarily, and I'm not sure if I ever really did, consider myself to be an Episcopalian, so to speak. I always loved the services and I got a ton out of them. But I'm not sure if it was ever strictly because of the doctrine or more if it was just the sense of community and belonging. I don't mean to say that in any sort of negative way toward St. Mary's. I still hold them in incredibly high regard in my heart. Yeah. I just think spirituality in that sense is a journey. And, you know, there was also a part of me that recognized that this is the church that I went to as a kid. And if I went to a different church, then I would call myself something else. The decision to go to this church wasn't originally mine because we've been going here since we moved to Napa when I was like 2 years old. It just always asking questions, always just trying to learn more. I didn't want to put myself in that box because I didn't want to limit myself to learning more about all sorts of other different kinds of denominations and faiths. And here we are today with Unitarian Universalism, which to me is brand spanking new and very exciting.
Did you continue to attend the Episcopal Church after high school?
When I was in college, I wasn't attending any regular church services while I was a student, mostly just because I was way too tired 100% of the time. But I was still active in St. Mary's life whenever it was time to come back for a weekend or a holiday or the summer. But in many ways, St. Mary's has been the only church that I have ever known in any really close capacity. I've been to Catholic services with my grandparents because they're Catholic. Now my dad and my stepmom in Wisconsin have their own church, which is also an Episcopalian church in Oconomowoc that I've been to now a half dozen times. But yeah, in many ways, St. Mary's is the only church that I've ever really gotten to know on that level that a person can have in their relationship with their church.
You mentioned that your two passions in terms of college academics were music and computer science. Tell listeners about the intersection of those two academic areas.
You know, it's strange. When I was taking classes, I never once pursued both music and computer science because I loved where they overlapped and I identified where they overlapped. It was very much just, I'm going to school now. I want to take the classes that I think are exciting and cool and the ones that make me want to take more classes in that discipline. So I've never taken a music class before. I want to take that now. Wow, that was really exciting. I'll take another one at the same time. I've never learned about computer science before. That seems to be the class that everyone's taking here. I'll take that class. Wow, that was fun. I want to take another one. These were the subjects that I just really gripped to. And after I was done taking a class, it wasn't, I'm happy I've done that. And I, now I can take this experience and put it in a box, which I had with many other different kinds of classes. It was like, all right, what's the next one? Let's keep this rolling. I want to learn more. I never really approached my relationship with music and computer science as let's find where they connect. The classes that I took and the approach that I had as I was taking them wasn't let's try to find the bridge between music and technology, because that's the case for a lot of Stanford students who take classes in the humanities. Now I would refer to music as being a subject that's a part of the humanities, is that because the school can feel so technology oriented and engineer oriented that even when students are taking classes in the humanities, they're always looking to make them humanities with direct applications to engineering or to the sciences or to STEM. For me, it was very much, I'd love to learn a ton about music and I'd love to learn a ton about computer science. But then, right as I was finishing up undergraduate, I was fortunate enough to be accepted into a program within the music department at the Center for Computer Research in Music and Acoustics, which is essentially where FM synthesis was invented in the 70s, which is responsible for our ability to do anything with electronics and music. It's responsible for why we're able to have this podcast today in large part. We're interested in taking you on as a master's student. You've taken pretty much all of the CS classes, computer science classes at Stanford, and all of the music classes too. And we feel like this program could be a place for you to explore where those overlap. And for me, what that ended up being was getting super into learning about recording and production techniques, getting people in the studio, learning about the studio, learning about microphones, learning about digital filters, learning about all sorts of fun stuff that you can do to create and then manufacture a product or a listenable product, including podcasting. although this is ever my first appearance on a podcast, so I'm so excited for this opportunity. That's where those things converged. It was right at the end. And I'm totally happy and blessed, of course, with my entire education, but I'm also happy with how I approached it, which was never, let's try to intersect these from the base level. It was, let's build a knowledge of music. Let's build a knowledge of computers. And then having both of those in my pocket, it was easy to then turn around and say, okay, now that we have these skill sets, now that we have these educations, let's see what happens when we try to take the stuff that has commonalities and squish them together. And that ended up being igniting a passion in mine in recording and working with microphones and studios and producing.
Yeah, I noticed in your bio, you wrote that these were two pillars of your education, which doesn't evoke a Venn diagram, you know.
No, certainly not.
But I love the way you tied all that together. That was beautiful. Tell our listeners about what you've enjoyed about teaching sixth graders. That's a tough age group.
It's a tough age group, but it's my favorite age group by far, because I still remember what it was like to be in sixth grade and fifth grade and around that age range of 9 to 12. What I've noticed since my own skill set as I've been dealing with students of all different age ranges is that I really love working with sixth graders, especially students around that age range, because they're just starting to realize in their cognitive development that they are actually their own people in a way that like a first grader is not yet really their own person. Their favorite music is the music that their parents or guardians or community listens to. They don't go anywhere by themselves and can't be trusted to do anything like that. When you're in those very early years, you're very much a vassal of your parents, your living condition. But once you start to get a little bit older in that age 10, age 11 area, you start to look down at your hands and realize those are your hands. And that's a perspective that you and only you can ever have. And you start to realize that every other person in this world can also look down and see their own hands. And that's a perspective that they and only they can have. You start to develop interests that are actually your own interests. You start to be able to reconcile, hey, this is something that I like because I like it. And this is really exciting to me that I've been able to identify this about myself. It's an incredibly critical time in our development. And those years are so much fun to work with, because in many ways, these young students, they're still so innocent, or maybe innocent isn't the right word, but by the time you get to high school, especially for me in my role as a substitute teacher, there is a sense of it's us versus the teacher. And we have a united front and the teacher's not going to break us. Sometimes you just have to step into the classroom and say, okay, guys, let's focus up. I'm not your enemy. I'm just this dude who's here to work you through this math worksheet. But sixth grade, they're still young enough that they'll absolutely tell on each other all the time for anything, sure. Which I just think is so funny. Oh, Mr. Raven, this person is eating food or whatever. And then I turn around, it's just like, okay, I don't care, but I should probably enforce this rule or else there'll be chaos and pandemonium in the classroom. It's this magical moment right before people really start to become full adults. Yep. I just use this word magical because I really feel like everything that happens during that time is so critical. But mm-hmm. It's just fun and it's unique. Who you are at 10 is an identity that comes and goes so fast. Mm-hmm. In my experience, I'm really good at relating with 10-year-olds. Especially because I'm just young enough that we're still of the same generation. So
it's true.
I was born in 96, but yeah, I mentioned earlier, it's really as if I was raised as if I was born in 97 or 98, which means I am one of the earliest Gen Z types. These children who are currently sixth graders and seventh graders, they were born in 2011, 2012, which means they are on the other end of Gen Z.
Right.
And as a result, it's fun to be a teacher in classrooms, especially at my age, because I'm young enough that there are certain things with which I can relate with these children. If they're singing a song that they saw on a TikTok in passing periods, I can sing along because I saw that TikTok too. Even though I'm not on TikTok, you just see this glint in their eye where they go, oh my goodness, Mr. Raven is a real person. Not just this entity that comes from Teacher Factory. One of my favorite bits of all time television moments is from the PBS kids show Arthur, where the 4-year-old younger sister DW is talking to Arthur's teacher, Mr. Ratburn. And how Mr. Ratburn says, like, no, DW, teachers don't live at school. We have houses just like you. And DW's response with, my life was so simple until this moment.
Yeah, that's good. I know you substituted as a music director at UUSM a time or two when Joel was unable to be here and he asked you to sub in for him. Was UUSM your first experience with Unitarian Universalism?
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely. And what a great first experience it was.
What were your impressions when you first came here?
My first time that I attended a service, a UUSM service, was when Joel asked me to visit, not to substitute music direct, but just to be a member of the choir, to bolster the choir. He had written a song that asked a lot of the bass section. So he wanted to strengthen the bass section with a couple of friends that he knew. So I joined for that. And this was in 2019. Up until this point, pretty much all of my experiences with going to church and getting up on Sunday to do that whole thing were the experiences that I knew in St. Mary's. And in UUSM, there was some stuff that was familiar. Like there was still a chapel with which we met, and there was still a couple of songs that we sang throughout the service, and there was still coffee hour afterwards. But what was really interesting to me about this service in particular was instead of focusing on an element of scripture, the service was instead built around honoring the life and teachings of a civil rights activist who was from San Mateo. And I just leaned all the way in. I said, wow, this is incredibly cool. Because it's still like engaging with this topic and learning about the teachings and see maybe how they can appeal to your own life. But with an example of something that I had never even thought about, something that could be a part of a service like that. And I was just floored. So this is an incredibly interesting thing. I hope I can come back to learn more. And then COVID happened, so you had to wait a couple of years, but Joel just kept calling my name to eventually come substitute music direct for him down the stretch. And every time I'm with UUSM and I'm engaging with the folks at UUSM, I'm just learning something new. And I still know that I have a ton to learn about the tenets and the provisions and the ideas of what it means to be a Unitarian and a Universalist. And I'm very excited to just continue on that journey for myself because I've really enjoyed it so far.
This seems like a spot where I can't resist plugging an upcoming two-class series that we have called Starting Point, which is great for people who want to know more about Unitarian Universalism in general and also UUSM in particular. So I invite you to join us. It's two Monday nights. It's September 25th and then the next Monday, October something. I will be leading that and it's cool. You'd enjoy that,
Thank you. I look forward to it.
What went into your decision to apply for and then eventually accept the position of music director here at UUSM?
I was at a bachelor party with Joel several months ago for our shared friend who's now married. And while we were there, Joel just hit me up and said, "Jeremy, I moved to New York." And I said, "Yes, I know." And he said, "You think you might want to apply for the UUSM music director job?" And I said, "Yes." Immediately, no hesitation. Because I love working with the UUSM choir and the role that I have had so far. And then in other ways, it's just the timing has worked out great in that I've been working as a substitute teacher and as a freelance recording engineer for the past about year or so. And that has been incredibly enriching and rewarding, but also very draining just to pretty much exclusively work for yourself. If you're not working, you're not making money, which when you have bills to pay and rent to pay, that's always a source of an incredible amount of anxiety. To be able to turn around, and if I had gotten this job, to be able to call myself the music director of UUSM, it's introduced an incredible amount of stability into my life, for which I'm incredibly grateful. And that's really the long and short of it. I said yes because I could, and I was looking for something to be able to really commit myself to in a program. Because when you work in mostly substitute roles, it's very much just, okay, show up. There's not a whole lot of room for you to necessarily put your own spin on things, because that's not your job. Your job is to make sure that whatever the person for whom you're subbing, whatever their plan was for you, that you're just executing that plan.
Sure. Right.
That's something that I can do, and that's something that I'm good at. But what I'm really excited to do now, and what I think I've been longing for, is the privilege and the responsibility of just being the person who makes those decisions behind the scenes to cultivate meaning and to figure out ways to inspire. And with UUSM now, that's something that I'm very much looking forward to do. Oh man, I'm so excited.
All right, we're going to wrap this up with some quick hitters. I'll ask you give me a quick answer.
All right.
Are you ready?
Oh yeah, let's do it.
What's the best flavor of ice cream?
Mint chip.
With you, love that. What keeps you up at night?
Lately, it's just been the heat. It's so hard to fall asleep with how hot it is in my apartment.
Yeah, I understand that. What is the best genre of music?
My favorite classical time period of music is late romantic, but I am also a big fan of prog rock.
What's the most used app on your phone?
The boring answer, which is the mail app.
Okay.
But I was pretty big into Pokemon Go for a long time, and I still play it with my mom.
That's good. When that was a big deal, we had a little free library and a little free pantry in our front yard, and we were a Pokemon Go.
You just see all these people coming out of the woodworks to engage. It's funny.
What is the best song of all time?
Oh man, this is an impossible question. Caroline Shaw's Partita for 8 Voices, as performed by Room Full of Teeth.
All right. I love it.
So that's homework for everybody who's listening.
What are you reading right now?
I am reading the book Dewey Defeats Truman, a story of the 1948 United States presidential election. I'm just on my journey of reading all sorts of different biographies, especially for American history. So I'm always reading through at least one or two of those.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What is the best musical instrument?
Exempting myself from, say, like, oh, the human voice.
That's what I really thought you were going to say.
If I can't say that, then I will say my favorite instruments to listen to are cello and trombone.
I love cello. When you get to pick the pizza toppings, what's on that pizza?
Same thing every time. Okay. Pepperoni, spinach, feta cheese. Best pizza.
That's pizza. All right. The best sunset you've ever seen. Where did that happen?
In 2008, my family went on a road trip all throughout the Great Plains of America. And one night we were in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, Western Nebraska. And it was the reddest, biggest sun that I've ever seen in my entire life as it was setting.
Yeah.
That is certainly my answer to the best sunset ever.
Nice. Okay, your house is on fire. All the people, the animals, they all got out safely. You have time to grab one more thing. What are you grabbing?
Whale. My stuffed animal. My stuffed animal whale, who I've had as a friend and pillow for the past 21 years.
Wow. Okay. That's a great answer. If you had to live in another country, where would you live?
For cultural similarities, I would probably say Canada, but I could also see myself living in a place like Spain. My Spanish is good, so I could get along well there and, you know, beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
Yes, it is beautiful. What's your favorite local charity?
It's called On the Move. They support a bunch of different initiatives and programs in the North Bay, where I grew up in Napa. One specifically is called Voices, which is a youth center for formerly foster youth and foster youth who are about to or are emancipating themselves once they turn 18, because that can be an especially difficult transition for foster youth, because once you turn 18, a bunch of support systems that you have are just dropped. When you're 18 years old, it's difficult to expect you to be able to just immediately move on your feet after that. So Voices is a center which is established in Napa maybe about 20 years ago to help youths who are going through that transition. I had the incredible opportunity to work for them briefly before I went to college. They're doing really, really great stuff there.
Great. Well, thanks, Jeremy. I so appreciate you taking the time to do the UUSM Connections podcast, especially this very busy first week for you. UUSM is so lucky to have you here with us, and I look forward to what you are bringing to our community and you becoming a real part of this community. Thank you.
And thank you, Jack. I really, really appreciate it.
All right. Many thanks to our listeners. And of course, keep making connections.